Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, December 28th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
Happy belated Christmas to you.
Yes.
Although we are recording this in advance, but
very good. Very good. We can't visit each other though, Graham. I think we've blocked off all communications other than the internets between the UK and France.
I know. I was going to ask if you had been taken out by this COVID variant that seems to be running there, you know, rampant in the UK, although I know you're in a remote area, so I'm assuming you're safe.
Yeah. I mean, we're very lucky. Fortunately, I'm in one of the very few places that's still tier one, but I anticipate we'll end up in a national lockdown again.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, obviously, this pandemic has just absolutely gotten a lot worse than people initially anticipated. So everybody stay safe, obviously. It's just, yeah, it's a very difficult situation.
And I think that's underlined during the holidays when, you know, it becomes clear that we're missing out on activities and stuff. So,
yeah,
I'll echo that. Everyone stay safe. Alex, so last week was pretty quiet with the Christmas holiday. But what do you think has been happening? I mean, I assume people are, you know, looking at their offers maybe from round one. But what else are people up to?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that are going on right now. Obviously, on decision wire, we're getting some nice conversation going, actually, people debating, you know, whether they go to this school or that school based on their offers, a bit of scholarship money and stuff like that. So that's always super interesting. And that's also why we highlight a decision wire entry on the show during this period. But also, you know, round two is around the corner, as it were. So in another week, just after we hit the new year, all the top schools have a round two deadline. I mean, it's chaotic getting all those applications in on time. So clearly there's lots of folk working very hard right now, getting those essays tightened for round two. So best of luck to those folks. And the other interesting aspect to that, Graham, is, you know, you've got to really scrutinize and analyze how you did in round one to really be effective in your round two strategy. Because there's some folks that did really well in round one. And, you know, maybe they're feeling like the job's done, but potentially the reason why they did so well may be that they didn't aim high enough and they could actually reach out into round two. So, yeah, some interesting stuff going on.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I should mention, I know everyone loves to go to the site and look at LiveWire and DecisionWire, or, you know, obviously we in Wiretaps, we feature a lot of ApplyWire entries, but there are some other resources like these essay topic analyses where we literally break down a given school's essay questions. So if you're working on your round two apps and getting ready for those, you know, that flurry of deadlines that comes right after the new year, make sure you're reading our analysis of these essay topics, because we've been doing this for years, and that is those pages on the site are really popular historically. So
yeah,
Read that stuff. The other thing we have going on is we did a couple more Real Humans where we profile current students in MBA programs, and the schools that we featured over the last week were Siebes in China and Emory in the US in Georgia. So check those out if those schools are on your target list. We also analyze the Ross and Fuqua employment reports, which is always fun. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is that we've had a whole lot of interview reports coming in on the site. And as many of our listeners know, we have this archive of interview reports where candidates are kind of reporting from the front lines, like, here's what it was like. I just had my interview at, you know, at Ross or at Harvard or wherever. And so those are coming in. And I think that's one of the nice things about applying in round two is that if you get an interview, there's already a lot of people who've kind of weighed in and shared what that experiences like this year. Obviously, the archive has, you know, the years prior as well, but those reports are really useful for candidates, I think. And that's something, Alex, I always mention this, but that was kind of your brainchild to get people to submit those reports and collect them. And I mean, there are thousands of reports in that archive now. It's really useful.
Yeah, we started that a lot of years ago. We used a wiki platform to collect reports back in the day. So that was quite an interesting project. But yeah, no, it's a very... it's a fantastic resource, and thankfully and gratefully we're at that stage now where folks are actually submitting new content to the archive.
Yes.
And that'll prove really helpful to the folks in round two. So that'll be very good. The other thing I just wanted to mention, Graham, and I hate to put you on the spot, but you talk about the Ross and the Duke and the Fuqua career reports. Have you looked at them yourself?
Yeah. So, I mean, I have not. I've not looked at them in the sense of like comparing them head to head. I quickly read the articles as I do. You know, we've been publishing these like profiles every time a school runs their employment report. But the thing that's been interesting to me as I've looked at all these reports is that it seems like for the most part, the leading schools haven't yet been impacted because a lot of the stats in these reports are really based on kind of pre-pandemic offers that were made. And so it's hard to tell. I think next year, we're going to see some different types of numbers. But was there something that you had noticed that you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, it's just one thing that's super, super interesting. I haven't read the reports, so I'll be perfectly frank with you. But if you look at the top 20 programs that we generally cover on Clear Admit, and we have all this data from LiveWire, ApplyWire, and specifically DecisionWire, if there's two programs that are comparable to each other in terms of the types of students that apply to them, the quality, and so on and so forth, and overlap in applications, overlap in decisions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those two programs, in my mind, are Fuqua and Ross.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you and I have actually looked at this data together, and for some reason, like there's a huge, what we would call cross-application pool for these two programs. You know, I mean, people often apply to both, they often get into both. And so it's a really interesting kind of head-to-head parallel kind of matchup. So
I mean, we know they're in the same tier, but they're in the same tier with the likes of Darden, Stern, and a couple of other programs. But the overlap between Ross and Fuqua is quite phenomenal in terms of the data that I've looked at over the last several years. So, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, very interesting stuff.
So if you're thinking of applying to Fuqua, you should also be thinking of applying to Ross and vice versa.
Yes. So one thing I wanted to say, as I know Christmas has now passed, but if you guys listening are feeling like you missed out on a chance to give Alex and I a present for the holidays, we'll take reviews of the podcast in our Christmas stockings if you're providing them. So please rate and review the podcast whenever you can. And Alex, we did get a couple of new reviews, one of which came in from someone named Doza H36, who called the podcast no-brainer to listen. And this person said, if you're a prospective MBA candidate, this podcast is a must listen. Not only do Graham and Alex do a great job of engaging with their audience and really deep diving into their profiles, but they provide the why behind the recommendations and the thought process an admissions committee would have. On top of that, they've built a community on Clear Admit that supports one another and provides communal feedback, which is incredibly helpful when going through this process. So the reason I highlighted that one, I know I have this tendency to read these reviews out. I think it's so nice to see them. But I thought what was cool about this one was this person's kind of commenting on the community that exists on the site. And we really do hope that when you go to Clear Admit, whether you're in a chat room or, you know, commenting on a LiveWire or a DecisionWire post, that you do feel like it's a nice place to connect, you know, with other candidates. And that's what we aim to do, at least. So really nice to get that feedback, Alex.
Yeah, no, very good. I know another review that came in, and we don't need to highlight them necessarily both on air, but the other one talked about listening to the podcast. Unfortunately, we didn't feature their entry on ApplyWire, but they, through listening to the podcast, it really helped them, and they were successful in getting into a top 15 program. So absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
With a full scholarship.
it's really... It is great to sort of get that feedback. I mean, at the end of the day, Graham, we've all got egos. So when someone says something nice about the work that you do, it does make you feel pretty good about what you're doing. We're passionate about this stuff. It's definitely great fuel to keep us going, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. So without further ado, or as you'd like to say, let's kick on and get into the wiretaps portion of the show. You've picked out a couple of ApplyWire entries and one DecisionWire. So we'll start with an ApplyWire entry, and that's going to be wiretaps candidate number one. So this person has 7 schools on her target list. She's applying to Columbia, Cornell, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, and Wharton, and not going to start school until the fall of 2022. So she has a little bit of time. She's working in consumer goods, And post-MBA, there seems to be, she's not really sure whether she wants to go sort of in a tech direction or maybe right back into consumer goods. And so as a result, her list of targets is kind of a mixed bag. She's got Amazon and, you know, tech companies, but she also has companies in the like food and beverage industry. She's got Cloud Kitchens, Ferrero, Mars, Beyond Meat. So she has like a bunch of companies. GMAT score, 730. GPA 3.9 and 3 years of work experience. She's located in the greater New York City area and is hoping to land, I mean, basically East or West Coast or maybe Chicago or even international. So, I mean, her post-MBA location is sort of like anywhere, it feels like, in the West, I guess we could say. You know, she actually asked a bunch of questions and provided a lot of detail on her candidacy. And so I thought we could try to get into those questions, but did you want to review any of these things? Because she offered a lot of detail about what she does, and I did know she mentioned she's a podcast junkie and that she's a huge fan of the Clear Admit podcast first thing in the morning. So here's another person that we might be waking up as opposed to putting to sleep. but anyway, what did you make of her candidacy? Because she did ask some questions and give us more detail in the comments and exchange you had with her.
Yeah, no, I think quite frankly, overall, Graham, I think this is going to be a very strong candidate. She's got another year ahead of her to sort of strengthen, you know, her sort of profile a little bit. But I think she's definitely on the right track. She's a little bit concerned that, you know, she's only been promoted at par with her colleagues. And she does raise this sort of question that in this time, you know, obviously of COVID-19 and the work conditions and the work environment, I mean, there's just not as much opportunity for candidates to really reach out and excel, like push for that really challenging project or whatever it might be, as many companies are just knuckling down and trying to survive these conditions and so forth. So I thought that was quite an interesting observation in terms of how candidates are able to handle what are suboptimal sort of conditions in their environment. So we'll see a lot of profiles, I assume, at the time this candidate applies that do need to address that. The other thing that she's a little bit concerned about, I think, she reckons she'll have one really good recommendation. So that obviously she's got one mentor or supervisor that's really sort of gung-ho for her. But, you know, that second letter might not be as strong. So that's being thrown out there. Frankly, Graham, her numbers are fantastic. You know, 730 on the GMAT, that's at average at the very, very top schools. 3.9 GPA, I don't care where you went to. You got 3.9, that's pretty good. And I imagine she went to pretty good school. She did talk about that. And she's a little bit concerned that maybe she doesn't have as much quant in the background. So what she's done about it, she's already done the MBA math. I mean, this is someone who's really thinking ahead, really thinking about all the issues. And quite frankly, I think Graham is going to ultimately end up producing great applications because she is thinking ahead and she is, dealing with all these particular concerns in a proactive fashion, and that's what MBA admissions admire, people that are proactive about these things. Her list of target schools is a nice spread, but I think I said this right at the beginning of my first bit of feedback, well, my only bit of feedback thus far on ApplyWire, is you might be underselling yourself and your concerns, which frankly is a good thing anyway. Overall, Graham, I think this is a potentially very strong candidate, but let me throw the question back to you because I do think this is worth a discussion on Wiretaps, not maybe even just today, but over the next several episodes. Clearly, lots of candidates are facing suboptimal conditions in their workplace. How should they be dealing with that when there aren't so many really sexy projects to jump on board with?
Yeah, and just to kind of underline that, I think what she suggested in her post is that, you know, you're like part of a team working on like some new product launch or a new idea that's, you know, really kind of still in the early stages. And a lot of those types of things just got backburnered or put on hold entirely. And so I think her concern is, well, what do I do? There's less opportunity to like you're saying, to do these big projects or get, make your mark kind of thing. And, you know, as companies kind of are on, like war footing or whatever you want to call it, like just like sort of trying to hang in there in many domains. So I hear what she's saying. I think you're right. It's going to be a problem for a lot of candidates. But I also think the admissions readers know that this is going on. And, you know, frankly, I'd rather be in her position where she's still working. She's, you know, she did get promoted once. She's at par with her peers. Maybe no big sexy projects right now, but frankly, you know, a lot of people have been laid off, right? Or companies have reduced staff. And so I think admissions readers are going to understand that. Although I also think there is an opportunity, and she does mention this a little bit in her comments, there's an opportunity for her to do things outside of work, maybe not in person, but, you know, she's on the board of a nonprofit. She also, pre-pandemic, had been working to help an animal shelter, and I'm just wondering, aren't there ways for people to get involved without being in person and do big things for, you know, nonprofits and stuff? So I really like this candidacy. I mean, I think overall, she went to a Big Ten school in the U.S., which means, you know, probably a decent institution. And as you said, 3.9, geez, you know, that's nothing. That's really nothing to be ashamed of. It's almost a perfect GPA, right? So
I mean, and that tells me two things, Graham, right? A 3.9 over a four-year period, she's smart. But it also, that's dedication, right? Consistent, right, over 4 years. So I don't think we should lose sight of that. This is someone, and again, I sort of got this thread reading her notes. This is someone that cares about what they do and they want to do it well.
Yeah.
And that's got to be a great attribute.
Right. And my only advice to her, and hopefully she's listening, is that, you know, first of all, CPG experience and even goals in CPG, it's not so common. You know, you don't get lumped in with all the tech folks or the consultants or bankers. And so it stands out. And I think the other reason it stands out and is often liked by admissions readers is because it's relatable. So in the sense that, you know, if you're working for a company that makes products or stuff that people can see on the shelves in the supermarket or wherever they're buying stuff, like that, it's easy for a reader to kind of quickly identify with like what you're doing and where. And so there's some points there for that. I personally liked her goals in that domain. I thought it was more interesting if she's kind of staying in that domain and heading for, she has a bunch of kind of food and beverage type, you know, options listed, as opposed to like tech product management, which seemed like more of a, you know, kind of diverging off the path. And so I don't, you know, obviously she'll write what she wants in her essays, but it felt easier to me to spin that storyline of staying in her space. I think of Kellogg and Wharton. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Graham, but I think tech product management is quite challenging too to move into unless you've got an engineering degree background. Am I right in that?
In some instances, I mean, I think, you know, it just depends on, you know, the recruiting process. But yeah, it's not, I mean, it doesn't seem, for me, it was just, I was like, okay, I understand the appeal of maybe going to one of those, you know, FANG type companies, but I just was like, wow, you've got this really interesting experience and it seems like you have some goals in CPG. And so I would just ride those. That makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
I also think schools on our list, you know, Kellogg and Wharton would probably be great for the types of things that she wants to do. I wondered why, you know, even throwing HBS into the mix, you know, a lot of these big food and beverage companies will recruit there as well. I'm not fussed about her recommendations dilemma. I mean, she'll get one great rec. And I think if I were her, if she's on the board of a nonprofit, maybe there's a recommendation somewhere in there, or even if she's been working with this animal shelter for over a year, maybe there's someone, you know, who's very senior there who, you know, could write a nice letter. They don't both have to be from your current job. And so people mix and match, and, you know, I'm not so worried about it. And plus she does have, you know, practically a year before she's going to be in the throes of, you know, this process. And so I feel like, yeah, she has time to figure that out. And I do love that she took MBA math, that course, to prepare her for MBA subjects and stuff. So I think that's all great. And again, I think she's going to do fine, and she seems to be really on the ball.
Yeah, very good. Best of luck to her, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you. This is someone that belongs in a top school, and with good execution, that's where she should end up.
Absolutely. All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person is applying to 8 schools, and they want to start this coming fall. And the schools on their list are Carnegie Mellon, Duke, Michigan, Minnesota, Rice, Rotman in Toronto and UVA Darden. And they also have an other, which they didn't specify what school it might be, but it's a school, I guess, that's not in our kind of database. So they've got a long list of schools. They've been working in investment banking as an offshore analyst with M&A, with the M&A team of a New York-based large bank, right? So they're located in India, and they're kind of doing the analyst role, but from afar. They want to stay in investment banking and ideally work with Citibank, Credit Suisse, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, or Morgan Stanley. Their GPA is basically a perfect GPA. They got an 89th percentile at one of the leading institutions in India. But when you translate that GPA, which just for our listeners who are not familiar with India's grading system, an 89th percentile is like unheard of. And so it basically translates to a 4.0 on the US scale. 5 years of work experience and a GRE score of 319. They would love to use the MBA to transition from India to North America. And you know, that's basically the profile. Alex, you and I talked about this before we came on air. We have some concerns about this candidate, and you know, a lot of it centers around that GRE, but I'll let you kind of describe those concerns a little bit.
Yeah, quite honestly, I don't really get this candidacy because on the one hand, they're outstanding. So, you know, the GPA, outstanding. It looks like they're doing very well at work. They're doing stuff outside of work. I love this. I have a strong social impact background, performed 25 plus street plays on social issues, volunteered with 3 NGOs, sponsor high school education for 2 students from lower income families every year, and have organized many awareness campaigns and fundraising events. I mean, this person seems absolutely brilliant, Graham.
Yeah.
In terms of their personal character, in terms of their work output, what they've done at work, in terms of their intelligence. You know, again, back just as we talked about the candidate, the first candidate with a 3.9 GPA, well, this person has a perfect GPA over 4 years, so absolutely brilliant. So why settle for a 3.19 GRE and have that be your weakest element of your candidacy, which ultimately, in my mind, then defines exactly where you'll go for business school? Because you've got to combine that with the fact that they're applying in round two anyway, which is going to be a little bit more challenging coming from India and potentially an overly competitive profile. That 3.19 is basically going to determine where they go to school.
Yeah, and I think as it now stands, they have a good range of schools. And I think given their stats, that's a fair, you know, they have some schools that they should get into, even with the 3.19. Mm. They did get waivers on the GMAT/GRE from Minnesota and Ross. So they have a good range of schools. But I was just sort of like, wow, imagine this profile with a, you know, 3.30 on the GRE or a 7.30 on the GMAT. And suddenly you're like, wow, you know, sky's the limit kind of thing. I recognize that it isn't, you know, obviously being an investment banking offshore analyst in India is maybe not as great as, you know, working for the bank directly in New York City or something. But, you know, they've actually had a really interesting experience in that they're already leading a team of 3 analysts. They've been training employees. Like they've clearly done well. Mm. And so I feel like, yeah, like you said, like everything kind of lines up, and then you see that GRE score and you're kind of like, what happened? And I don't know if they took it just once, and I know we're out of time practically in the sense that they've got to apply to these schools in a few weeks, or maybe even in less than a few weeks, right? So I'm a little torn. I mean, part of me wants them to submit an optional essay that says, I'm not happy with this score. I'm signed up to retake and I'll furnish that score as soon as it's available. But I recognize, you know, it's hard to juggle taking the test with getting all these apps in. And I just was, yeah, I'm a little concerned that they're missing an opportunity. But again, they are in a hyper-competitive group from India. It's round two, and it's round two in a year that likely is going to be one of the more competitive that we've seen recently. So I get what's going on here. I just couldn't help but dream a little bit about what would this look like with a better score. So that was the thing that struck me. And the fact that they mentioned, I'll only take it again if it's a last option. I was sort of like, I don't know what kind of a signal that sends.
Well, but how will they know it's a last option? That's my point. It's like, you'll only know that when you get the results. And then it's like, it just boggles my mind. I mean, it could be that clearly something's happened at work and all of a sudden they've got to go to business school now or whatever it might be. And that might be what's going on. And maybe they sat the GRE cold and got a 319 and they're throwing their apps together to see where they land. And, you know, frankly, pandemic situation that we're in, that's going to be a similar story for a few people. I get it. Mm-hmm. And I reckon this might be the story here. If that's not the story here, what I would advise this candidate to do is knuckle down, continue to do well at work, continue to perform your street play. I just think that's absolutely fantastic doing that kind of stuff. Apply round one next year with a terrific GRE score.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I was wondering if because they have 5 years of experience, they're kind of like wanting to go right away, or like you're saying, maybe there's something. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting case because I don't want to be one of those people who's like, oh, the test is everything, because it isn't. I mean, this is a holistic process. But when you do come into the process in the middle of it, round two, and you're from a hyper-competitive portion of the applicant pool, the test does matter. And, you know, so it's tricky. But we'll see. I mean, maybe they'll get into Ross where they have a waiver, and Ross is a great school. And, you know, anything's possible, right? So we shall see, I guess.
Yeah. And I hate to say it, but in my mind, the test is everything. If everything else in your candidacy is outstanding and the test score is not, to me, that test score is ultimately going to be everything in that profile, because that is the anchor that's going to weigh the profile down and then determine which target schools are appropriate.
Yeah, yeah.
Typically, the holistic approach, everything is sort of in the middle or a little bit better here and a little bit down here or whatever. And therefore, the test is a small piece of the puzzle. But in this case, I would argue that the test almost does become everything.
Yeah, it stands out for sure. So anyway, I do want to thank that person for sharing their profile. Hopefully our advice helps in one way or the other. I mean, maybe they take an approach of looking to resit and getting schools a new score, because what could happen is some of those top schools on their list may just say, okay, new score's coming, we're going to waitlist you for now and get us the score when you can, you know, and that could open up some doors.
Yeah, get the test scheduled before the interview invites are due.
Yeah, exactly. So let's move on, though. We have one more candidate for this week. This is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire entry from the website, and it's a candidate who is undecided about where to attend. This person applied to Dartmouth, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, Darden, and Yale. Obviously, they're going to start this fall, and they got offers from Duke, Michigan. Michigan came with a $50,000 scholarship. They also got into Darden and Yale, and they are currently waitlisted at Tuck and Kellogg. So they did really well in the sense that, you know, they kind of almost around the table. I mean, they got a couple of waitlists and a bunch of acceptances, but they're wanting to get into consulting after business school, and they're not really sure where to go. Some other background is they have a 720 on the GMAT, a 3.88 GPA. They're currently in Georgia, and they mentioned that it's for them, it's come, they're waitlisted at Tuck and Kellogg, and so it's come down to Darden versus Yale. And they're hoping to negotiate to get a little bit of scholarship money from each of those programs, because they got nothing other than that money from Ross, which, as I said, is $50,000. They love the social impact focus at Yale, but they also recognize that Darden is like a consultant factory and they want to do consulting, right, post-MBA. So they like the communities and the people at both, although they think Charlottesville might be a slightly easier transition. So there was more said in the comments, because there's been some back and forth as people debate this. But Alex, what do you make of this scenario and the fact, I mean, one thing that struck me right away is they seem to be really focusing on either Darden or Yale, and they're not really taking into account the Ross offer with $50,000. So, like, what do you make of this decision here and debate?
Yeah, this is very interesting. And a few things I wanted to point out right from the beginning. We talked earlier on the podcast about, out of the top 20 programs, which programs are most similar. And here's an example of that. The person amongst the programs they targeted were Duke and Ross, yeah. And they got admitted to both Duke and Ross, and those two are the two programs with the most overlap that we see in the top 20. So interesting to see. I didn't remember that was necessarily the case for this DecisionWire entry, but it's good to see that what I talked about a little bit earlier plays out here. The other thing that I wanted to just address right at the beginning is when we see on LiveWire people get admitted somewhere and they get denied somewhere and this, that, and the other, and there's lots of speculation that it's a little bit random and the process and how do you get admitted in this school and denied at this school and so on and so forth. And some of the answer to that is down to fit and how you articulate that in the individual applications. But this is a great example, I think, of things really playing out appropriately, or if appropriately is the right term. So this candidate might not think it's appropriate, but whatever. So you've got the waitlist decisions at Tuck and Kellogg, and Kellogg's M7, Tuck's slightly behind M7. Then you've got the admit decisions at Yale, and you could argue Tuck and Yale are actually probably in the same tier, but there's a little bit of randomness there. But you've got the admit decision at Yale, and then the rest are all in that top 16 group, that Darden, Ross, and Duke. Fuqua, what I would call the top 16. I saw in a report the other day that they're labelled top 15, even though there's 16 programs in the group. So I'm not quite sure how they managed to do that. But they're in that top 16. So this is a candidate's sort of, obviously they prepared well, they did a very good job with their applications, and the game sort of played out like it should, right? Waitlist at slightly higher tiers, then admit across the board, and so forth. So that's very good. Okay, so they got an offer at Ross in terms of scholarship. So one of the things that they could do is potentially take that offer and negotiate with the two schools that they would prefer to actually attend, which is Darden and Yale, in terms of their current offers. And we could talk a little bit about how they go about that negotiation, Graham, because I think that's something that a lot of our round one candidates are currently dealing mm-hmm. with, the, you know, are they able to negotiate? How do they negotiate? What's the smartest way? So I'll let you talk to that a little bit in a minute. So they need to do that. Frankly, on the dialogue we're having, the answer is Darden is a bit of a more comfortable option, and Yale is a bit more of a life experience option, a bit of a challenge option for something different, right? So that's sort of how I'd summarize those two options for this particular candidate, because they're more from the South and so on and so forth. But yeah, the opportunity to negotiate scholarship, but remain on those wait lists and really push to get off those wait lists, because as a round one candidate getting on the wait list, it's not over. When round two decisions come out, you'll be reevaluated at that point. So follow the wait list rules for each of the schools you're on the wait list. And one thing that schools really want to know of the folks that are on their wait lists is, do they really want to come to our school? So the extent that you can signal that you feel that that school is a great fit for you, and you're doing X, Y, and Z over the course of the next couple of months to try to sort of up the stakes and up the ante a little bit, that's very useful. But schools will only admit candidates from the wait list that they think will attend. They want 100% yield on those waitlist decisions. They won't get 100% yield, but that's what they're seeking. So be aware that any folks on the waitlist. But I'll let you talk a little bit about the scholarship issue, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few things happening here. I mean, number one, like you said, stay on the waitlist at Tuck and Kellogg, see what happens. I would actually recommend reading our waitlist guide, because we have a guide that we published on the site. I can't remember what it costs, but it's not much. I think it's like $9 or $10. And it's really useful in terms of carving out your waitlist strategy. In the meantime, yeah, I would absolutely go to Yale and Darden and just indicate that you're really interested in coming, but you have an offer from Ross with $50,000 attached to it, and you're just wondering if there's any movement that they can make to help, you know, help tip the scale a bit, you know. And I think the worst thing they can say is no. And some schools, you know, will negotiate more than others, but it certainly never hurts to ask. I also think it was really interesting. I mean, this person said, they said, and I'll quote, "One other data point I'm considering, I attended a large state school in the Southeast for undergrad. So the UVA Darden experience feels a bit more familiar to me. And I'd give the edge to Yale, New Haven in terms of being a new and exciting experience." So I think they've already begun kind of weighing, you know, these options, and they have a number of reasons why they you know, share that they're kind of leaning Yale. And I would just add that you know, for a lot of people, when you look at these schools, Yale is often mentioned in the top 10 nowadays. It's a school that's really moved up over the years in the rankings. And, you know, many people kind of say, well, you've got the M7, and then you've got another group of schools, which might be Berkeley and Tuck and Yale, sometimes Stern, that are kind of right after that group. And so I can see why this person's thinking about that. But again, I like you said, I wouldn't give up on the likes of Kellogg and Tuck. So as you said, you know, round one waitlist is, I never get too worried about a round one waitlist. I feel like the acceptance rate off the waitlist when you're put on the waitlist in the first round is, it might be as much as like 50%. So your odds are not bad of getting an offer from one of these two programs, given how early it is, especially if you follow the rules of the waitlist and carve out a nice strategy to kind of make it known, as you said, that you want to attend, and that you're doing things to address, you know, whatever might be, you know, any holes in your candidacy. I mean, there are a lot of things you could do. So again, I think this is an interesting case. I mean, it is hard to walk away from $50,000 at a place like Ross, which is a great school. But, you know, everyone has their preferences. And so clearly this person seems to be willing to do that in you know, exchange for going to Darden or Yale. It is interesting, though, and I think I'll be really curious to know, like, what happens. I'd love for this person to continue to post to this DecisionWire entry so we can find out, like, where do they get in the end and you know, how does it all turn out for them? But, yeah, there's no harm in asking a school, and often they might ask you to, you know, prove it, like show them the letter you got from Ross or whatever, but you can do that and see what happens. The worst they can say is, no, we can't give you any more money.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So, yeah, hopefully we offer a little bit of advice, but at the end of the day, with the current options they have on the table, a couple of years in New Haven sounds like the place they're going to end up.
Yeah, agreed. So, Alex, thanks again for picking these out. I did want to wish our listeners a great, final few days of 2020. I mean, 2020 has been a tough year, and so hopefully we get a bunch of good news as the days go by here. And, everyone hopefully can have a probably subdued but fun New Year's celebration. And, yeah, thanks to everyone who's listened with us all this fall, and hope to, you know, keep bringing these episodes to you, pandemic or not, in the new year. And, yeah, Alex, thanks again for all your work on this year.
Yeah, our pub's shut, so I'm not quite enamored with this new year. But there we go. Yeah, everybody, please stay safe and happy new year. And, let's hope 2021 is COVID-free with the vaccines rolling out and we can get back to a normal life.
Yep.
Best of luck, everyone.
All right. Happy New Year, folks. We'll be back in 1 week's time with another episode of Wiretaps.